Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the MMQB Week in Review podcast, our Friday show, which started with a regular cast of characters. The last few weeks, it's been rotating a little bit as we've lost some people. But this week, I am Mitch Goldich, and today joined on a holiday weekend Friday by Albert Breer and Connor Orr. Albert and Connor, how you guys doing?
Hello, Mitch.
What's up, Mitch?
Everything.
You look a few pounds lighter.
I was about to say, everything is totally different. We usually tape this the afternoon before. Today we're taping in the morning. I'm seeing you guys in the morning. Everything's different and thrown off by the holiday and being busy this week. And then I hit you guys with the biggest surprise. Regular listeners of the show will know why this is a big deal. But Connor, I just have to apologize.
I know.
Someone has to actually say it, so
you don't have a beard anymore. And like, know. You know what people don't understand is that like Mitch's beard was just the perfect COVID-19 beard. Like it was just unruly and it was wild and it was like attached to a person's face that you're not used to seeing with a beard. So the whole thing was
beard.
The bit just worked so well for me. And, you know, just to see it evolve every time that, he came on. Oh, man, it was something that I looked forward to be honest, you know, and during a time like this, you got to stack things next to the other that you're looking forward to.
I guess we got to be careful here. We got to inform our listeners that this does not mean the pandemic is over, right, Mitch?
No, it doesn't. It was just time. It was getting
too hot. We don't want anybody getting the wrong idea here.
Yeah, it was, I appreciated Connor's encouragement with the beard. Sometimes it was hard to tell if it was just a bit.
I liked it.
It seemed genuine. But yeah, you know, the key for me was I did absolutely no grooming. Because like if you trim the bottom and like have a clean line underneath, then you're like a beard guy. And I was not a beard guy. I never have been. I'm just a guy who sometimes grows out a beard. And I did that, you know, more prolifically during the pandemic the last 3.5 months than I ever had. But yeah, it was a very fun. You know, we always start this show by all talking about what we've been doing and keeping busy with. And sometimes it's books and movies and TV shows and whatever. The beard is what kept me busy. It took me several days. I did it in stages. Like, Connor, you did this a few weeks ago. Who knows? Time is meaningless now. We can't mark the passage of time. But you once taped this show with a mustache. And I also briefly had the mustache. It was very fun shaving the beard. I had to take scissors to it. It was like the scene with Luke Wilson in the Royal Tenenbaums when he's just like using scissors to cut. That is a very dark scene, and it takes a turn. And I obviously stopped short of the place he takes it to, if people are familiar with that movie. But it was very fun. It was the first time my beard was ever long enough that I had to actually take scissors to my face before I could shave it. And I did go down to the mustache on Friday and surprised some people on Zoom with the mustache Friday night, and then that was fun for a weekend, and then Sunday morning it was time, and I got rid of that, and now here we are.
And I guess I just have to introduce you guys to my dog, Gunner, who is making a lot of noise in the other room.
Hi, Gunner.
Sorry if that was distracting.
Gunner. Where'd you get the name Gunner, Albert?
It was actually, it's weird. When we were going through dog names, and he's going to be 7 now. So we got him before we had kids. We got him actually maybe a couple months after a couple months after we got married, actually. And we were going through different dog names. And so, you know, whatever, you go online and you look at lists and everything. And we saw it. And then I remembered that my first dog when I was a kid, now his name was Togo. Is a Rhodesian Ridgeback, and his father's name was Gunner. And so Emily was like, oh, I like Gunner. And I'm like, wow, that's perfect, because my first dog's dad's name was Gunner. So that was sort of the story behind it.
Very cool.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us, since this was 7 years ago and not this week, do you want to tell us what you've been up to this week? Albert, I know I already covered myself, so we'll just roll right into you guys. Albert, what have you been up to?
Yeah, I mean, I would say like getting ready for vacation, which when you have 3 kids is a pretty massive ordeal. So that's encompassed getting the air conditioning and in our car fixed, because you don't want to be driving on vacation with little kids and no air conditioning. And that required me trying to run down a part that I guess there's a real shortage of across the country. So that'd be one thing I did. And then, I got the Thule rack, which was a huge win, and much harder than I thought it would be. But the good people at an L.L. Bean about 45 minutes away from here helped me out there. So that's really it. Like, going on vacation, I really do miss the days, Mitch, and you guys, I'm sure you guys are still there, where, I mean, really, you could pack a bag and walk out the door and head out on vacation. That's sort of that. We're an armada now when we go away.
Well, it wouldn't be the MMQB Week in Review pod if Albert wasn't name-dropping brands. So shout out L.L. Bean.
I feel like I'm taking a page out of the Connor Orr playbook there.
I'm just in a slump, that's all. I'm just frustrated.
Although we will say, in the group text we were talking, I might have been the thirstiest of the MMQB family this week with my efforts to procure an Asian cereal, which, I don't want to give it away, but I'm hoping that this is going to be in my home within the next couple of months, and I will have an update for everybody.
Wow. Very excited for you, Mitch.
Yeah. Connor, how about you? What have you been up to?
I've been putting together a table and chairs and a bench. So that's taken some time. We had talked about the book that I was reading, North, by Scott Jurek, about running the Appalachian Trail. I'm rounding the corner there. I'm in the final like 10 pages, so I already have some books stacked up there to replace that one and to move on. And we have a very small little beach in our community that just opened, and we have social distance squares, which are 6 feet apart, and they're slightly bigger squares for families, smaller squares for just your average routine sunbather. And so our daughter is super into jumping in the water and building sandcastles. So we've been doing a lot of that. We've been eating a lot of dinner down there and just hanging out. So that's what we've been up to.
I have to say, I love geography. It was very confusing when you first told me you were going to the beach. And now you're saying there's a beach in your community. It made no sense to me. I think it was last week, your daughter stormed in after we finished taping, and you were like, oh, we're going to the beach. And then I saw pictures on Instagram, and I was like, it doesn't make any sense. But then I just kind of decided I'll just choose not to think about it too hard, because I know you don't live in a beach town, but so I guess there's magically a beach in your community. How does this work?
A lake community. So it's like a square mile lake. And then there's a bunch of like tributary, like lagoons and ponds and stuff like that. But there are three spots where, we have sand brought in, and you just kind of build up a beach area. And it's pretty realistic, but it's fresh water, so it's nice. I don't know. It's a good time. You can still build all the sand castles, and you have the beachy vibe without any of the beach inconveniences, like finding parking and stuff like that.
The world is just so weird right now. I feel like one day I'm going to see a picture of you on a surfboard riding a giant wave, and I'll just think, well, that makes sense. Stranger things have happened this year, I guess.
That would be true, but we're more of a kayaking, canoeing sort of water entity. So,
got it. All right, well, we should probably move on to the actual purpose of this show. For those of you who are joining for the first time, in addition to bantering about beaches and jigsaw puzzles. Oh, by the way, I did an update from a previous show. I nearly finished my 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle, got all the way to the end, and discovered there was one piece missing. There's no way we lost the piece. It just had to have come with $9.99. So how did I spend my week? Last week I spent it doing the puzzle. This week I spent it searching for the one missing puzzle piece. And I think it's time to quit and pull the plug and wreck the puzzle and just give up on ever having all 1,000 pieces. Very disappointing.
That's
frustrating. I don't want to talk about this.
Man.
Let's move on.
Yeah,
but
that is the worst.
To those of you who've never listened, what we do is we go around and we talk about stories that we've written that are posted at the MMQB this week. And it was a busy week for news. And this is often a dead time of year, and especially July, as we get into the next couple of weeks when Albert's going to be away. But it feels like a lot happened. We got our warning Sunday night when Cam Newton signed with the Patriots. It was all of a sudden like, hey, this is just going to be a giant thing all week. And then a few more things came up. So the Washington team name has been a big story that has sort of evolved over the last few days, with some corporate sponsors speaking out against the name, and then FedEx, which is major news because they are the naming rights holder for the stadium. And so a lot of people are talking about, you know, it's just a matter of time before they change it. So when are they going to change it? What are they going to change it to is an obvious next question. And Connor, you just filed Friday morning a story with five potential ideas for new team names for the Redskins. Do you want to go through and share some of those?
Yeah, so I kind of grouped them into categories. So it was actually like 13 names, but in five different categories. And so we can go through them real quick. The first one was the Americans or the Warriors. The Americans, I feel, would protect Daniel Snyder from the exodus that he fears, which I think is the kind of that conservative viewpoint that we shouldn't kowtow to these movements, that it's part of our history, whatever it is, that it's not offensive. I mean, these are the people that theoretically he's been, you know, pacifying all along by keeping this as the team nickname. So if you name it the Americans or you name it the Warriors and you take it in a strictly like an American direction, and by that I mean, you know, you steep it in red, white, and blue regalia, you do the whole, you know, it, like everything with you know, I don't know, I said it's sort of like a Trumpian campaign aesthetic, you know what I mean, and you really kind of just go all in on that idea of whatever that is. And I think that you at least save the portion of the fan base that you're worried about losing. I'm not thrilled about it personally, but I've seen the Americans and the Warriors sort of bandied about there a lot. The one that I really like, the one was a finalist for a rebranding contest like 5 or 6 years ago, and that was the Red Tails. And that's obviously a tribute to the Tuskegee Airmen. And, you know, while a lot of that took place in, you know, Alabama, where they were trained and everything like that, the Tuskegee Airmen were this, you know, obviously this historic, diverse group of fighter pilots during, you know, the Jim Crow era. They dealt with all this discrimination, but still dug in and fought for our country, critical in a lot of these World War II missions. So I thought that was a really unique way to change the nickname from something super negative to something super positive. And along that line, and we can, I guess, take a break and kind of talk about it there too, was in the Washington Post, they did a column about possibly the Red Clouds, you know, and Red Clouds War. Red Cloud was a legendary, you know, Native American warrior who, you know, stood his ground against advancing tribes and even the U.S. military who was building on his land. And it was taken to Washington, D.C. and was sort of celebrated as this heroic general. And, you know, you wouldn't really have to change anything. If you renamed the team the Red Clouds, the fight song could still remain the same. You would obviously tweak the logo to honor him and not do something as, you know, generically offensive as the logo that they have now. You could make it into something that, instead of offending Native Americans, celebrates their heritage, which I think would be a really interesting sort of 180 and probably would get a lot of people on board. I think that's a hard, some of those are hard to argue against because they celebrate a part of the history of our country that maybe not a lot of people know about or talk about as often.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, so you, to me, it's like, I almost feel like this should be offered up to the Native American community first.
That's like a good, yeah.
Like, I feel like that, like I sort of feel like, and I think back to like Florida State, right? And I don't know where all this stands now, but I remember reading stuff about, and like, look, they do the tomahawk chop there and that's not great. But like, I remember hearing like that the Seminole nickname wasn't considered offensive because they work with the tribe on so many different things. And because so much of what they do, like the ceremony and everything else, is authentic. And it's meant to honor the tribe. And so, like, I just sort of, like, I kept thinking about that over the last couple of days, how, like, Florida State, like, has escaped criticism because their nickname is not meant to, like, cartoonize, like characterize, like, what's the right word there? Like turn people into cartoon characters. It's meant to honor people. And so, you know, I sort of think, like, wouldn't it be nice if, you know, you offered, if you said, okay, we're going to work with the Native American community and we're going to change the name to something that honors the Native American community. And, you know, the history there is they were initially, actually, they weren't even the Redskins to begin with. They were the Braves. And then they became the Redskins. And, So, like, I think maybe it would be nice if they worked with the Native American community and said, we want to do something with the nickname that'll honor you guys. And so maybe it's the Braves. And I guess Braves doesn't really work for, and I'm not sure the reason behind that, but I guess Braves doesn't really work. But maybe it's Warriors. Maybe it's, like you said, Connor. Maybe it's Red Clouds. Whatever it is, I almost feel like this has been offensive to Native American people for such a long time. Like, why not, like, offer this up and say, we want to work with you guys in the nickname, and we want to do something that's going to honor you guys, rather than just taking it off in a completely different direction.
Yeah, one suggestion that I made in the column was to basically take 2020 off, right, and be Washington FC, you know, the Washington Football Club for a year, and take that time to really, you know, integrate yourself into the history, learn about the culture, offer it up, like you said, maybe to the Native American tribes, make sure your fan base has, you know, some sort of a hand in this, and that way you protect yourself from all sides, and you end up with something that maybe you could be really excited and proud about, you know. And I think that that's one of those things too. It's, I think it's important not to rush into it, you know. If we have a football season this year, which again is a big if, I mean, I think that you could survive a year without, you know, a nickname. You know, you could just be Washington for a year, you know.
Especially this year.
And especially this year. And, you know, that's what most of the country is calling you now anyway, you know. you know, we here at the MMQB only refer to them as Washington, you know. And so, and I know a lot of other news organizations do the same thing. And so just take the year, you know, take the year. Because a lot of these branding campaigns, a lot of these marketing campaigns, you know, one of the interesting things is I look at West Point, where every year for the Army and Navy game, they all have special uniforms that commemorate, you know, maybe a certain battalion or a group of special group of people, fighting forces, whatever it is. And they roll out, like, the week or two before the games, these brand new uniforms with a special web page and a history and a list of people who fought in these epic battles and served our country. You could do that in a year. If you're Washington, you could take the time to create something like that, with Army and Navy, I think, as a blueprint, you know, and to use what they're doing as sort of a jumping off point to, okay, well, let's dive deep into this community that we've offended for so long and actually come up with something that can honor the heritage, that can make everybody proud, and it could be something cool that everybody is into. I think that, you know, there's nothing wrong with taking your time on this one. I don't think there's any hurry here.
Yeah, especially just given how late it is. I mean, it's already July. So let's say if public pressure keeps rising and they feel that they truly have to get rid of the name this year, because let's be honest, Daniel Snyder's not going to just come to this decision himself. The only reason this would ever happen is if the league tells them they have to, or if public pressure from so many other places is just too much and he has to relent. But it's way too late in the process to come up with their actual new uniforms and name and logo in time for this season. So it's crazy to think about the idea of them playing in 2020 in just, like, plain blank red uniforms with no logo. Like, you know, I don't know.
I think the logo itself is considered offensive, right? I might be wrong about that, but, you know, maybe you go from, you take the logo off the helmet or whatever.
Yeah, and that's then, what I'm saying. And it would look like Cleveland Browns-ish, where it's
put
just
a
like
W
the,
there. Or
the
something. Solid, like, you can come up. You can come up with something, though. I don't know if the spear would be a problem, but you do the spear. Like, whatever it is. Like,
isn't there an R logo? Don't they have an R? Like, it's just like a script.
Yeah, they had the R. There was
the
R.
You could do a script R.
Yeah, they had the R. But, yeah, you could do the script. Yeah.
But if they're dropping the name for the year, the R doesn't make sense.
Turn it into a script W?
If we're
script W in the same font, yeah.
I kind of like just the plain blank uniforms, but I don't know. We'll see. Should I share my suggested name that will never happen in a million years? The Washington 51s with statehood is in the news. If they were the 51st state, make them 51.
I love that.
The problem, I like it too. It will never happen because a lot of the people who are currently who Daniel Snyder is afraid of alienating in this debate, I think would also be alienated by that decision. I think if all of the Washington football team's fans were within Washington, D.C., that could work. But given how political that debate is, I think a lot of the fans in Maryland and Virginia and around the country would not be pleased with the idea of the 51s. But it's a nice thought, right?
My outsider submission would be like the Jam, because it's like the 95 South in that DMV area, right, is the most epic traffic congestion in the country. And so you're just like, you're the Washington Jam, you know, and like, your symbol is just this sort of like...
Just gridlock?
You know, gridlocked, like motor vehicle people just like honking at each other or and yelling.
Or it's just like a map. It's just a map of highways that are all like bright red.
Well, that's, I mean, if you're just going to take like a clip art highway, then you could maybe cobble together a new uniform within the next 2 months and have them wearing that with the cartoon Google Maps helmet in time for September. Maybe that is possible.
You could, yeah. I'm just saying that any uniform that takes less than a month to design and brand and produce, I'm looking at you, Alliance of American Football, it's not going to be good, right? It's going to be like, oh, like why is every team just the Wildcats with different versions of Wildcats? Like, you know, come up with something cool, come up with something meaningful, historical, and take your time. That's what everybody wants out of this process, is for people to learn and to listen. You know, it's this is a way of doing that. So, I don't know. That's my two cents.
Yeah, I agree. There's got to be. It feels like a gap year is sort of likely, because you want them to act fast on changing the name, but you're correct about the importance of taking their time before rushing into something else. So that's why this feels like a move that, you know, maybe you'd make in February, and then people have the whole offseason to prepare. But now the last 5 months have gone by, and obviously this is... It's been an issue for a long time, but people are being loud about it now, and you know, maybe they can't wait until next February. All right, Albert, let's talk about your game plan column. We have talked to death all of the many ways that the coronavirus has affected the offseason and the league as a whole and next season, and we talked about the draft and free agency and you know, coaching searches and Zooms and virtual meetings and all kinds of things. You talked about a particular class of player this week, and those are the free agents who agreed to, in some cases, pretty big deals earlier in the offseason and have not been able to sign their contracts yet, and how that is putting them in a particular type of limbo. So can you tell us a little bit about your Thursday column this week?
Sure. So we use Trey Waynes as sort of the example. And for those who don't know, you know, former first-round corner of the Vikings, he makes it through 4 years, and he's sort of at that point and. Every football player, I mean, from the time they're teenagers, you know, that's what you're building towards. Is if you're an elite football player, you're building towards your mid-20s when you want to be at the top of your game, and that's when you cash in, and that's when the real life-changing money comes. And so, you know, he got there this offseason, signed a 3-year, $42 million contract with the Bengals, and as part of that contract, he's got a $15 million signing bonus. And so... You know, because of the pandemic, he wasn't able to take a physical. So his contract, after he agreed to terms in March, remained unfinalized. So March passes, April passes, and then he decides, as the off-season program via Zoom is starting to ramp up, I'm going to take my two kids and my wife, and we're going to move to Cincinnati. And one of the main reasons he moved to Cincinnati was the league was actually discouraging, like, the idea that guys could fly in to their NFL cities and meet with team doctors offsite. They only wanted that to happen if guys actually lived in those cities, because they didn't want, you know, everybody traveling all over the place. Well, Trey Waynes moves his family to Cincinnati in May, and they're getting settled. And so he says, okay, well, I'm going to go meet the team doctor at his private practice and take the physical, and then, you know, we'll be able to finalize the contract. And the Bengals basically told him, you can't do that. We don't want to create a situation where, you know, now all of a sudden, you know, we did it for Trey Waynes, so we're going to have to do it for everybody else. And so, I reached out to Trey and I wanted to get him to talk for this. He didn't feel comfortable about talking about, because we're talking about $15 million at a time when a lot of people are getting laid off and everybody else and everything else. But there is a reality to this, which is his agent now has told him, Do not do anything competitive. Do not do any one-on-one drills. Do not do anything with other people on the field. And like from a business standpoint, it's hard to argue with that decision. If you've got a $15 million check coming, aren't you like the right thing to do is to be as careful as you possibly can until you get that until you can actually sign the contract, right? And so the problem with that, of course, is that now guys are going to show up to camp at the end of July, a lot of these free agents that haven't officially signed their deals, and they're not going to be in football shape. And so are you going to have hamstring injuries? Are you going to have Achilles injuries? Are guys going to be as ready for the season? And so there's this just, I mean, like it's, we know how complicated everything is going to be in 2020 to begin with. But I mean, like you look at the decision that Trey Waynes has made and a lot of other free agents have made, and it's like they want to work out. They wanted like, the fact that the league hasn't sorted this out is kind of crazy to me, because it's like the guy wants to take a physical, and the league's basically said this is on each of the teams. And some teams, Miami, Cleveland, Green Bay, are allowing third-party physicals, but others aren't. And you know, I know at least in one case, and this was another case. This wasn't the Trey Waynes case, but in another case, a team exec leveled with the agent and said, "Hey, listen, you know, our owner doesn't want to." You know, go and write checks right now. He's worried the season might get canceled. And if the season gets canceled, he doesn't want to be have handed out money he might not be able to recoup. And so there's just like this, I don't know. I mean, like, I think it sort of adds, guys, and I know I said a lot there. I think it sort of adds to just the amount of stuff that teams are going to be working through if they do show up at the end of July, and just how complicated, you know, the next few months are going to be in general for the NFL.
Yeah, this is going to be messy. I mean, you know, and I think a few weeks ago, Jenny and I were talking about on our podcast that just the inevitability of all of these things coming to a head. And to me, it just seems irresponsible to continue talking about, you know, okay, well, when this happens and when this happens and when this happens, well, okay, we're only going to do two preseason games, or maybe we're going to do one. We haven't figured out all the basic tenets of human safety yet. I mean, that has to be priority one, you know, and it's just not happening right now. There are players who don't know what they're doing. There are agents, coaches, everybody. Nobody knows what's going on. I mean, I was on the Hard Knocks call a few weeks ago, and Sean McVay and Anthony Lynn were talking, and he said, you know, Coach Lynn, I don't know how we're going to social distance football. He's like, I haven't figured this out yet. And this is one of the brightest young coaches in the league. And it's just, to me, every week there is a new sort of thing that arises that kind of shakes us all and says, hey, let's forget about the season. Let's forget about all this other transactional stuff. You know, Cam Newton to the Patriots is fun to talk about, but this doesn't exist without a plan. And it really feels like a lot of these guys are in the dark, unfortunately, with what they're trying to do and how they're trying to accomplish it.
You know what? Like, I really think, like, and there are teams, for one reason or another, the league office is pushing hard back against this. I sort of agree with the teams that say, like, let's push the season back a month. Let's give ourselves time. Let's give players time to acclimate. Let's give them a chance to have a full training camp instead of truncating everything to fit that September 13th start date. Like, let's just give this some extra time. And if you do that, A, you're giving like science a chance at least to catch up on some things. So maybe you've got better treatments when we get to the season starting. And then B, you've got a chance to study the other sports. You know, you've got a chance to study what happens in baseball, what happens in basketball. And they've got the flexibility to move back to Super Bowl. So I'm sort of with these teams, guys, where the idea of moving the start of the season back to October, like I think it works. And the argument I've heard against that, oh, well, you're going to go into the second wave. Listen. If there's a second wave that's bad enough to knock out the NFL season in November, December, it ain't coming back anyway, you know? So, like, I just feel like it makes too much sense to push the start of the season back.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Connor.
Sorry. Well, yeah, and I think that what doesn't make sense to me is that the NFL has had the benefit of having this bird's eye view all along. When coronavirus started, they were just a month from the Super Bowl, right? And so they had this whole wide off season to look out on, and all they've done is say, we're going to forge ahead, we're going to forge ahead, we're going to forge ahead, when in reality, you let everybody else kind of go ahead. I hate to say trial and error here, because I don't think any team should be playing sports right now, but you have time to study what the NWSL is doing, the Bundesliga, Premier League, all these teams that are, you know, moving forward in a safe and somewhat not safe, but in a, I don't know, vaguely responsible way as much as they know how to do right now. But yeah, I think that they have not taken any of the runway that they've given themselves, and instead of just kept planning that we're gonna go on September 13th, and it's like, why are we so married to this when this is unprecedented in itself? And so I guess you don't want to affect future seasons or whatever it is, mm-hmm. but you know, I don't know, I just think that there's no reason to keep going so full speed ahead as they have been.
I mean, I think part of it, like, I wonder, guys, like, and you know, like, this seems like maybe too simplistic, but maybe just putting their head down and pushing through a free agency in the draft, and the fact that that work gave them a false sense of confidence, like, because this is a much bigger deal than making free agent calls or having a draft over Microsoft Teams. You know what I mean? Like, actually staging a training camp, like, that is like, it, like, they're not comparable. You know what I mean? Like, those things. And so I think there's an interesting date coming, though, that I think everybody needs to pay attention to. And that is this coming Tuesday, July 8th. The Ivy League is going to make a decision on what they're going to do about football season. And you guys may remember the Ivy League was the first to cancel their basketball tournament. And everyone thought they were crazy. And that was before we really knew what was going on. And a couple people have said to me, watch what the Ivy League does. And it's the simplest thing in the world. Like, where do a lot of the best doctors, where do they go to school? Like, where did some of the best, like it's just that they probably have access to really good information in that league. And what they do on Tuesday could wind up being some sort of harbinger for what's to come.
Yeah, I mean, I have so many things I want to react to here. The issue of players being worried about actual, like, football injuries is so interesting. And hearing that that's such a widespread concern, to go from not being able to work out to all of a sudden trying to ramp up really quickly. And Albert, we've talked already about how 2011, after the lockout, there was a rash of guys blowing out their Achilles, which is a serious injury that can affect your football career a lot. And, you know, a concern of injuries like that happening. And I'm absolutely not minimizing the coronavirus, but I know there are a lot of people out there who are. And I would bet you there are a ton of football players who would much rather get coronavirus than tear an ACL or an Achilles, which is something that I think a lot of them are concerned is going to have a much bigger impact on their football career, even though obviously we're all learning a lot about corona and you know, we've seen it have you know, effects on people that are very serious. But you know, I wonder if we start to see a rash of injuries like that, if that's maybe the thing that makes the NFLPA step up, or other, or team doctors or whoever, just say like, hey, we can't risk these kinds of things. And you're right, it just seems like it's so easy to shift everything back. And the time is built in, instead of forcing it and making them ramp up so quickly, to be able to have training camp go longer and get guys up to game speed before you put them out there in actual games. I will throw out, I did share a conspiracy theory earlier this offseason. We remember how badly the ranking or the ratings tanked in 2016. I bet there are a lot of NFL owners who would love to shift more of the season after the election in November. Now we're getting into major conspiracy theory territory. but the idea of them having fewer games overlapping with the election attention, I'm sure would be nice. But obviously, that's not the real reason to do this. I'm mostly kidding.
Well,
sorry.
You want something interesting on that, though? So, like, why the league office has been pushing back, like, in these teams, some of these teams that I've talked to, I've like, that's the one, like, one of the universal, like, things I'm getting. Somebody from one of the teams mentioned to me, like, it's like, we're just sort of wondering if Goodell's getting pressure from Trump that starting on time is important to his campaign. And the NFL starting on time is important to creating the idea that America is okay and America is going to be all right. And I just, like, it's a little bit of a wild conspiracy theory, but maybe not that wild, right? Like, maybe not, like, you know, I don't know. And we know that Trump's been in touch with all the commissioners, right? So he was just like, kind of keep an eye on that, because if we push the season back, like, that's a pretty good indication, like, things aren't okay in America right now, which anyone logically knows. But like sending that message to the country, like I just thought it was like a really, it's an interesting conspiracy theory. And I'll put my tinfoil hat back on and shut up now.
I like this. This has been a long overdue transformation of this podcast into a conspiracy podcast.
Yes.
But I mean, I think college football seems much less likely to happen this year than pro football, given compensation and college campuses and all those things. And I think if the college season is canceled and, you know, who knows what's going to happen with MLB and NBA, I think it's already pretty obvious that things are not okay. But one other point that I wanted to make, Albert, I think at some point you brought up that like certain teams, that certain teams might not want to pay players if they don't think there's going to be a season anyway. Mm-hmm. And one thing that's interesting is that the longer the NFL drags this out, there are going to be differences of opinion where certain teams might think the season's more likely to happen than others. So like a guy like Jamal Adams, who everyone's talking about whether or not he's going to get traded and he's 2 years away from free agency. If the Jets decide that they don't think there's going to be a season, they could trade him to a team that maybe does, and they might be able to get market price for a guy 2 years out from free agency for a guy that they think, well, he's not going to play anyway. And just like the fact that teams are on their own and having to decide how confident they are. Like I was talking to this about this with Eagles fans. Brandon Brooks got hurt. And so they're saying, okay, are they going to sign Larry Warford? Are they going to trade for Joe Thuney? Are they going to replace him internally? And it's like, well, if you don't think there's going to be a season, there's no sense in spending money or making a trade. And just the fact that teams are working with different information or going off hunches instead of, you know, the league coming out and making a statement. Obviously, you can't, and it's too early, and who knows what's going to happen. But it's just interesting to watch how the fact that teams might have different confidence levels and different information and how that might affect the way that they choose to act and treat this upcoming season.
Yeah, I do think that there are some teams that wish there was a little stronger direction from the league office, because at least like the business side executives, I know that they've sort of felt like they've been on their own to make these decisions. And I think part of the logic there was that things are so different from state to state. You know, like different states are obviously, you know, different teams are dealing with different dynamics, you know. And so, like, I think that there's been a feeling that, like, the league office really needs to step up here and give everybody a little bit more direction.
All right, we should get to a little breaking news here. I don't know if you guys have Twitter up while we're taping this, but we
always
opened. Connor just has my Twitter feed up at all times in case I tweet anything that he wants to see.
It's the best. It's the best Twitter feed.
I saw this from Adam Schefter, but I'm sure that this has been shared by plenty of people. But it looks like just a press release from the Washington football team. It says, statement from the Washington Redskins: in light of recent events around our country and feedback from our community, the Washington Redskins are announcing the team will undergo a thorough review of the team's name. This review formalizes the initial discussions the team has been having with the league in recent weeks. Dan Snyder, owner of the Washington Redskins, stated, this process allows the team to take into account not only the proud tradition and history of the franchise, but also input from our alumni, the organization, sponsors, the National Football League, and the local community it is proud to represent on and off the field. Ron Rivera, head coach of the Washington Redskins, remarked, this issue of personal importance to me, and I look forward to working closely with Dan Snyder to make sure we continue the mission of honoring and supporting Native Americans and our military. We believe this review can and will be conducted with the best interest of all in mind. And then for effect, at the very bottom of the press release, it just says the word Redskins in all capital letters. I think they used the word five or six times on this one sheet of paper that I'm looking at, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Ron Rivera, by the way, earlier this week defended the use of the name in a radio interview. If this is that important to you, 5 days ago you could have said it. My goodness gracious, these coaches are just injuring themselves trying to straddle both sides of this line.
He's also catching a lot of heat on Twitter for bringing the military into it, which really
comes from a military family, so I think that he gets, I don't know, I would give Ron a little bit of a pass on that one because he does come from a military family, and I'm sure that was part of the
that's
whole
fine
idea.
But a week ago you said this was this name was okay. A week ago, not even, like, holy crap. Like, and now all of a sudden it's not okay? What changed in 4 days? This has been the team's name for 50 years.
Well, what changed in 4 days was hearing from FedEx and Nike and about not getting the RFK Stadium site.
Does no one have, like, oh, my God. They wouldn't have fired you if you said it was a stupid name.
Well, here's what he said. Okay, so his, I got the quote up now. I think that's a discussion for another time. I feel
4 days from now.
Yeah. I feel a guy that's my age, my era. That was always a part of football, the name of the Washington Redskins. So is he defending it here?
Now we have a statement from Goodell released.
Which the NFL, Brian McCarthy from the NFLPA, for the NFL League Office, tweeted that out. Right. And that was. In the last few weeks, we have had ongoing discussions with Dan, and we were supportive of this important step. So what do you guys think? Do you think that this is, I mean, I feel like if you're taking steps in that direction, like, isn't this sort of the point of no return?
You can't go back.
You can't go back, right? You can't do a thorough review and then come out on the other side and say, well, we decided to keep it. That's awful. The other thing that stands out to me is the NFL statement says, ongoing discussions we've had over the last few weeks, and I think there's a real effort here to make it look like this is something they've been talking about and that it was not just all of the sponsors dropping them this week that made, like, and, you know, whatever, we've talked about conspiracy theories, but that feels like obvious spin to me. I mean,
we should mention too, like, the one thing I don't think you mentioned was that the guy who's the CEO and founder of FedEx is actually a minority owner too. Fred Smith. He's actually in the ownership group. So not only did FedEx come out and say what they said, but that's also like one of Dan Snyder's partners, like, kind of making that move, which I think is significant.
Yeah, somebody who has more clout than just a general sponsor. If that makes sense. I will say, I mean, this statement from Snyder, input from all of these different groups, alumni, sponsors, the NFL, the local community. It does not mention Native Americans.
Yeah, does not mention Native Americans.
In the, like, list of people that they want to get input from, which is a notable absence. And, you know, and some of this is like, you know, you see a statement, and sometimes the statement sounds good, and it sounds promising that they're going to go through a process, but then you have to look at who it is and just say, you know, how much confidence do you have in these particular people to go through this process and come somewhere? It feels to me, this feels like the beginning of the end. I don't know how you can.
Yeah, I'm actually going to tweet that right now. This sure feels like the point of no return. I don't think there's any way. There's no, like Connor said, there's no way that you can do a thorough review given the climate in the country and everything else and everything that's happened with your sponsors. There is no way that you can stand up there a month from now and say, guess what, guys? We're good. Yeah. We're still the Redskins. Like, there's no way.
Yeah, it's impossible. I think if there's a season this year, we may get the blank red jerseys and no name and then come back with a new team name in the fall of 2021, hoping the league still exists. And then who knows, we'll get a brand new stadium in DC and they'll host a Super Bowl and whatever bribes it takes for them to change the name. Albert, that's all, this is all part of bargaining, right?
We may have actually like unwittingly like kind of like laid out the blueprint for them, because it's probably too close to the season, right? Like, to I would think you're way too close to the season now, like Connor said, to pull an AAF and come up with uniforms in 6 weeks or whatever. And so, like, yeah, like the blueprint, I guess, would be to be, the Washington FC or whatever for 2020, and then, put the plans in place to rename the team in 2021.
Yeah. Unless you just want to call yourselves the Arizona Hotshots, then by all means, go ahead and do it.
Hotshots was a good one.
The Apollos, there's some good ones, yeah.
All right, well, we spent more time talking about this than I expected. We were going to talk about, Connor, you had another great piece on Friday. Maybe we save it for another podcast, or should we just do it real fast?
I just want to say one thing. I'm going to plug the article, and I'm going to send everybody there, and then we'll break it down maybe next week on the Week in Review. And that is just that we did the top 10 what-ifs of the last decade of football. We put out a call on our Instagram page at the MMQB, which you guys have been awesome, by the way, at checking it out, responding to us, giving us great ideas, not only for our podcast, but some of the written content as well, while we try to get through the summer. And so we did 10 biggest what-ifs. And to me, the most Forrest Gumpian, like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon figure of the 2010s is Chip Kelly. This guy's fingerprints were everywhere.
Love it.
Throughout this decade. Like, you know, and basically my top what if, and it wasn't because it was the most important, but it was the one that I was kind of most fascinated about writing about, is what if Chip Kelly gets Marcus Mariota from the Titans during that draft day trade? And I think so many things change, right? Because, you know, you're not hiring, you're going to keep Chip Kelly through that season. You're probably going to give him another season after that. Maybe the power spread works and it popularizes as, you know, an offense in the NFL. I think it's a version of what we're seeing a lot of teams do now, just with a little bit more of a broader playbook and a little bit better concepts. But, you know, Doug, where does Doug Peterson land?
Yeah.
Where does Carson Wentz go? Like, where, what happens to all these people? And I think a lot of it can hinge on this, his desperation to grab his former Oregon quarterback there. So
100. I actually agree with that. And I think that it would have been so interesting to see what Chip would have done in that circumstance. Because, again, like, I remember a couple times talking to him about how, like, Marcus Mariota was the perfect quarterback for what he wanted to be offensively. And I also know, having talked to some of those guys who were on that staff, how having an immobile quarterback in Sam Bradford completely cut off their identity. And so I think 15 would have played. I mean, people forget, like, and I know Connor isn't one of the people that forget, but The guy wasn't like this, like, complete disaster. He won 10 games 2 years in a row.
Yeah,
with no previous NFL coaching experience. Like, so yeah, that's a good one.
The reason they didn't trade up for Mariota, they were all the way back with the 20th pick because they won 10 games the year before. And if they were higher in the draft, it wouldn't have taken as much capital to move all the way up.
Also, if you're the Titans and you take that deal, what happens to Rustin Webster, who was let go at the end of that season, and then John Robinson and Mike Vrabel? I mean, there are so many things that can just reverberate from that one single trade. So check it out.
The Niners hire somebody else instead of one bad season he had there. They bring in somebody else.
Maybe Jim Tom Sula is still an NFL head coach, baby.
So I haven't seen your story yet, Connor. I want to ask you if you have one that I think would be number one on my list, on yours.
Shoot.
Andrew Luck declares for the draft in 2011.
That was not on my list. That's an interesting one, too.
So if Andrew Luck declares for the draft in 2011, he's the quarterback of the Carolina Panthers. Cam Newton goes to the Broncos. The Broncos get rid of Tim Tebow before the Tebow mania year. Peyton Manning is never a Bronco. Now what happens with Peyton Manning? Because the next year, Andrew Luck's not available in that draft. So do they kind of keep going forward with Peyton Manning in Indianapolis because it's Robert Griffin, not Andrew Luck, at the top of that draft class? So I've always thought that was an incredible one. Like, if, because Andrew Luck, he was seen that whole year in 2010, his redshirt sophomore year at Stanford. This guy's going to be the number one pick whenever he declares. And it was a little bit of a stunner when he went back to school. So if that happens, if Andrew Luck comes out, Andrew Luck's a Carolina Panther, maybe he's still playing because maybe he doesn't get the crap kicked out of him the same way he did in Indianapolis. And, like, it's just, there's so many tentacles to that one.
That's good.
So if you want to do a sequel to your list.
It's fun with the ones that are early in the decade. Like, there's definitely a recency bias, and, like, everyone, obviously you can't write a story like that without talking about the 2017 quarterbacks in the draft. And, you know, some of the more recent blown calls and things, but the ones that were early in the decade where we've already seen how much has played out since, and Connor wrote about RG3 staying healthy, which, you know, that was back in 2012. But man, that Andrew Luck one, and seeing how many teams and
dominoes.
And
Now Von Miller's not a Bronco, like, right? Because Cam Newton's probably a Bronco. So what happened? Like, it's just, there's so much there.
Yeah. Wow. So is Josh McDaniels is still coaching Denver as a success?
Because Elway had already taken the job. Elway had already come in then, so that would have been Elway's, because Von Miller was Elway's first pick, so that wouldn't have been it. But it's just there's just so much there with that one. I always thought that was like, and I think Connor, our old colleague Dave Damashek, might have done one of his. Do you remember his, like,
NFL? Oh, the NFL. Dave is the best.
So I think Damashek did one on, you can look it up, but I think Damashek did one on if Luck had declared in 2011.
Always good recommendation for a little Damashek content. Love that
guy.
No
question.
All right. Well, what a podcast. We did miss Jenny today, but hopefully she'll be back with us next time. But did not expect breaking news in the middle of the podcast.
There you have it.
But I guess here we go. This this has been the MMQB Week in Review podcast here on a holiday weekend, Friday. Hope everyone out there has a great holiday weekend. Enjoy yourselves. Stay safe, though. We've been talking about coronavirus all off-season here, but make sure everyone's being responsible. Wear your masks. I know all three of us. I'm now speaking for you guys, but I believe we all feel strongly about this. So have a
it's
good...
It's easy, everybody. It's very, very easy to do.
It is. Have a good, responsible weekend out there. Thanks for listening to the Week in Review podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the MMQB NFL podcast. You get all of our shows 5 days a week. Check out the MMQB's website, all of our stories that are posted, the ones we talked about today, and a lot coming up the rest of the off-season. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you guys again soon.